Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 10 of Slam Fire Radio. It's Matthew, the Warning Shot McClatchy, and I'm joined by
Trevor the Frelate.
Whoa, dude, you need more energy. Where's your caffeine drinks, man?
Trevor the Frelate.
I didn't say kick yourself in the nuts and say it again.
There you go. I thought I had good energy the first time, like Trevor the Frelate. I was going for a serious, you know.
Yeah, very deadpan kind of, you know, serious and somber, if you will. It's a somber show. I mean, no, it's not.
I am a monotone kind of guy, you know.
You're a monotone something or other. Hey, so, yo.
You know what's cool?
Ice cream's cool. Oh, you mean like what's kind of neat? Neato,
yeah,
if you will.
Neato, coincidentally.
Oh, okay.
Quinkydink.
Yeah.
Episode 10, you can go on the Caliber rant, right?
Right, I could.
10 gauge, 10
millimeter. Yeah.
What else we got?
10. 30-aught 10? No, I don't think that's a caliber.
No. There's got to be more calibers with 10 in them.
Yeah.
But 10
I don't know,
gauges
man.
Are cool.
Maybe if Owen was here, he could tell us, but sadly, he's not.
What's
off.
Up with that? Well, he might show up.
He might.
And we might also have a special guest show up.
We might have a special guest show up. I think it might be a time change thing, so he might be here in like 20 minutes.
What it boils down to basically is I'm impatient, so we started with
Elka. Here's a special guest.
Oh, here's Jewel. She's jumping in and interrupting the show. Hi, dear. And she's not going to say anything else. So that's that. Hopefully you guys all heard her.
Is done.
Yeah, she's done. And she walked away. Yeah.
So yes, episode 10, June 20th, 2013.
I guess Owen is, like we said, late. And our special guest, we'll just wait. If he shows up, we'll introduce him. And if not, we won't say who he is so that we don't embarrass him for, you know, being late and not showing up. So is that cool?
That is cool because I don't want to get shot.
I don't want to get shot either.
And I'm not sure if he's, you know, the kind of guy who has a short fuse.
Right. Who
knows?
Know
if he did lose it, you probably don't have any hope in heck. So,
yeah.
Let's just, not do anything to aggravate him just in case he is sensitive.
Good call. Good call. So, Daniel Shaw, if you're listening, we're talking about. Oh, oops. That's my bad. Anyway.
If you're listening, quickly give us a new topic because you're not here.
Yeah. Oh, we'll come up with something. I got a good one, I think.
Did we just throw Shaw under the bus?
We may have. But then again, when you come on the show, or if you don't, that's what happens.
What? Wait. Okay. All right. Insanity.
I don't understand the question. So what did we do with guns this week?
I did more than you.
Yeah, I did nothing interesting. So we're going to move on to Trevor.
No, I want to hear about this new pellet gun.
See, I wasn't going to mention it. I get made fun of for being the 22 guy.
Who made
and
fun
I've,
of you for pellet guns, though?
And I've downgraded. I've downgraded to a pellet gun.
Yeah, it's kind of weak.
It kind of is weak, but here's the thing. I like pellet guns. They're fun. They're not very loud, and I can shoot them in the backyard if I want to. So, you know, what are you going to do? So anyway, you guys remember my YouTube video where I shot the Dr. Pepper can out of the air with my Crossman 2240. Well, that's fun and stuff, but I got kind of tired of changing the CO2 cartridges, so I got a Crossman 1322, which is the same gun, but with a pump. So you just pump it up however many times you want. It goes up to 10. It doesn't go to 11. It just goes to 10.
No, the reason I wanted to hear you talk about this is because, as you know, well, you found out tonight, I had one growing up, and it may still very well be in my father's possession.
You should go get it.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to try and track that down, and we'll compare them. Because this thing is one of the original ones from either late 70s or early 80s. Probably early 80s.
Yeah, that'll be back in the day when they knew how to make them. This thing is more plastic than anything else, but the important parts are still metal,
right.
which is good. But I got the skeleton stock for it. So it's actually a little carbine, or a carbine if you're American. And it's surprisingly accurate. It's a 22 caliber, so it's still packing enough punch to, you know, take out a small rabbit, I guess, or a big squirrel. I don't know, one or the other. Mm. But it's kind of neat. And Jules has actually wandered in again and mentioned that I should, you know, probably say that this was a anniversary present from my cool wife. So.
Oh, neato. Yeah, you neglected to mention that when you said it was on its way last week.
Yeah, I see. Basically, I bought it for myself and then realized that I had forgotten my anniversary. And so Jewel said, that's okay, you can just have the Pelican for your anniversary present, because she didn't get me anything either. And I believe I got her...
Oh, wow, that's all kinds of fail.
What did I get her? I don't remember. But she bought herself something, which was from me, I guess. So,
listen, I've been down this road. You want to change the way you guys are celebrating your anniversaries.
Oh, I'm no, just... listen to this. We have pre-bought all of our anniversary cards for each other, and we only bought the majors. So first anniversary, 5th, 10th, 15th, and then we jumped to 25, and then 50. That's it. We pre-bought them. Those cards are the ones we're going to hand out on those anniversaries. All the other ones, they're just days.
Eh.
Okay. Yeah, we're a little less romantic in the kind of gag me with the Rolaid kind of, you know.
So how many years you got in?
This is 7. This is 7. Yeah, awesome. So it's Pelican for 7-year anniversary. Just that's letting the all the other rule. Guys out there. Yeah, that's the
so
new rule.
When was it?
Oh, I don't know. Like the 6th, I think, of June. Okay. June 6th or June 3rd? June 3rd, because it was a 6-month 3rd. I think, yeah, 6-month, 3rd day, and 3rd year. It was 2003, well,
happy
I think.
Happy anniversary, man.
Oh, it was 2006, I guess. We got married. I don't know. Right, something like that.
You know how I worked it out so I wouldn't forget the dates?
You got married on your birthday.
Oh, almost. I wish. Oh. Halloween, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
A costume party at the church. I think if I showed up as the devil, it would probably get some. Anyway.
No, that's cool.
We got engaged on the 12th of the 12th.
Uh-huh.
So we got married on the 8th of the 8th.
Beauty.
I never forget those dates.
12 the 12 and the 8 the 8.
Yeah, then took a year off.
So 12 gauge and then 8 gauge.
Eight millimeter. 8 millimeter Mauser.
There you go.
Awesome. Let's bring it back to guns. That's cool.
Yeah, that's how I did that there, right?
Yeah.
Back to guns, good. Away from weddings and anniversaries. And
so, Owen.
Owen, what did you do with the guns?
Yeah.
Well, I got my sword out and beat up my TV.
Yeah, and I put on some fake armor and danced around in my living room.
Oh, listen to this. I was at his place. Oh, and I got another story, actually. I just remembered. I was at his place. We were building magazines last weekend. Boy, that's a real joy. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Oh, suck it up.
So we're sitting there and we're bored, right? So he throws in one of his LARPing videos. He's going to kill me because it's clearly not LARPing. These guys beat on each other. Holy crap. It's insane. I was watching and I was like, yeah. I'm just going to call you LARPer from the other side of the computer screen from now on, because I don't want you to actually smack me with one of them swords. It's pretty neat, though. They had these full-on battles and everything. It was cool to watch. But, yeah, back to gun stories. So you guys remember how my school is pretty awesome for gun-related stuff?
Oh. Hold on. It's important in all this. Some guy named Shaw just logged on to Skype.
I see that. I'll add him to the call here.
All right.
In a minute. So here at the school today, water gun fight all throughout the outside of the school.
Nice.
Yep. And the other day we did an obstacle course, and one of the obstacles was to take a squirt gun and shoot a small bore rifle target that was pasted to the dumpster.
Awesome.
With a squirt gun. Yeah, it's definitely a not anti-gun school. It's very cool.
We tried water gun fights once at my school.
Yeah.
And we thought it would be fun to go up the street to the next high school.
Right.
And start spraying them in hopes that they would come down and spray us.
Right.
Instead, they threw a block of wood through somebody's sunroof. True story.
No. Wow, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, it's not an escalation so much as a, what did Bolivar say today? He said, I was talking to him on the phone. He said, what did I tell you about escalating the violence? I said, 0 to 60, man. And he went, yeah, it's not so much an escalation with you as a, wow, that story would be so much funner if I could remember the word he said. Anyway, 0 to 60, it's not an escalation, it's a.
It's a step. I don't know. It's a ramp.
Why don't we get our guest on?
All right.
Let's do this right.
Well, let's see if he answers here. So, Joining us now, from the Gunfighter cast, it's Daniel Shaw!
He used to be all the way from Japan.
And this is the part where I edit, because he hasn't picked up yet.
Right.
So, editing. Oh, hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hey, God, I'm sorry, dude. You said Atlantic. I read Atlantic, and I was thinking, that says Pacific.
Yeah, they Pacific must be on the, time.
They must be on the West Coast. You guys are on Pacific time?
Atlantic and Pacific time. We are specifically on at 9 o'clock Eastern time.
Because I'm Eastern, and it was the whole ocean thing.
That's right.
Had me all confused. You guys can keep that in if you want.
Yell it all
hey,
in.
No, this is recorded. We're live. We're halfway through the show. So welcome to Slam Fire Radio. How you doing? Silence, huh? Nothing?
Crickets? Daniel? Hello?
Oh, sorry. Talking to the wife. Oh. You do that part. No, sorry, guys.
Oh, it's all good.
I do apologize.
Oh, that's it's
a,
all
no,
good.
Don't worry about it, man. We fly by the seat of our pants over here. So
That's how I roll, too.
Yeah, it's funner this way.
I was actually, Daniel, going to get a bottle of Wild Turkey in your honor tonight, because if I remember correctly, some of your first shows were recorded with a little bit of Wild Turkey in the mic. Is that not correct?
Yes, Austin Nicholas was a current or a frequent guest on our show.
So did you just pour the Wild Turkey directly into the mic then, or?
We just kept it sitting close.
Perfect.
Let it fumigate, I guess.
Let it fumigate.
Right on. Well, Daniel, where we're at here is we just did our intro, and we're into what we did this week in guns. So we'd like to maybe hear what you did this week in guns, and then we'll move into our main topic, which is essentially you. We've got
and what you did with guns.
Yeah, but more importantly, what's coming down the pipe for you and the changes that you've got going on now that you're home. But let's hear what you did with the guns, and then maybe we'll get a little bit of an intro for our listeners about who and what Daniel Shaw is all about.
Sounds good. Well, cool. What I did in guns, how long do we have for this podcast?
As much time as we want. It's our show.
That's right. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
Because at this point in my life, everything I do has something to do with guns or training for guns or in some way, shape, or form.
Kinda so sounds like me, only genuine. And
there's only Daniel, I believe, gets paid for it.
Yeah.
Yes, but not very much because you know this is all just beginning. It's starting out for me.
Yeah.
I transitioned from decent paychecks to next to horrible paychecks to. having to start a business on my own from scratch and try to get it to take off somewhere. So I got my hands in like a little bit of everything right now, just trying to put milk in the fridge for the 3-year-old,
Yeah. Well, it will. So this week, outside of getting the training academy up and running and planning classes and stuff like that, anything else other than just general stuff? You get any time to yourself anymore with guns? Or like you said, everything is just about getting the academy going?
Well, I don't get to play much myself. I went out with my son, who's 11, and he was going to be my cameraman for me recording a couple of videos. And I had forgot to give him his pill that morning. So your cameraman, who has like severe ADHD, and he's 11-year-old, and all he wants to do is play Minecraft on an iPod and go back home and play on PlayStation.
So it's like
see, Trevor knows
with Matthew.
Well, I was going to say, Trevor knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Only I put it on you, man.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting like 10 seconds that I could use out of the, being out there for like 2 hours.
Wow.
And that's kind of how it ended up.
Cool. Well, that's a good start.
Oh, it was fun. But I did help two friends of mine that were friends before I kind of left the area. And I've been gone for a long time with the Marine Corps and just came back here to where I grew up. So people are like, hey, oh, you do this now. Cool, I'd like to do that. You know, I need to learn. My wife needs to learn, this and that. So I'm getting some pretty good support in that area. And I just helped a couple of friends that I hadn't seen in a very long time, make new gun purchases. I
very
came
nice.
In and talked to them and, gave them the gun gospel, I guess you could say. And they're like, you know what, you're right.
Nice.
What do
so
I need?
You told them by 1911s.
Yeah, well, you know better than that. Well, actually, one bought an XDM, which isn't a bad choice, but not usually my first choice. But the other one just bought a. I think he's getting ready to get a XDS 9mm.
Right.
Those new ones, those are pretty sweet. But he was kind of leaning toward a car PM9, but he ended up trading a gun today for a 17 HMR because I have a 17 HMR and we just want to go do some. As far out as that thing will go and, choose accurately. So it's fun little guns.
Yeah, Trevor just got a 17 HMR.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I took a gopher from almost 300 yards. And, wow. Yeah, I was convinced after that I needed one.
Yeah, but by gopher, you mean squirrel.
Well, yeah, Richardson ground squirrel. Gopher, yeah. not a big fat groundhog. One of those, you know, they're both the size of a black squirrel, I guess.
It's a little guy. 300
yards. Yeah. Nuts. Oh, man. If you go on my Facebook photo album there from the Easter weekend in Calgary, you'll see all kinds of dead squirrels. There's one.
Were you the one that was counting?
Probably. Although he really can't count much past potato.
Yeah.
Oh, potato. True.
But I was probably trying. you're right. I was updating Facebook after every squirrel that I shot or every gopher that I shot. There's one particular... One in particular that I'm proud of that I got a picture there that I took in the head from 190 yards.
And you were aiming at the head?
Yeah. And the buddy with me said, I don't see it. I said, well, all I see is its head. He said, well, you're never going to – and I got it. And then I've got a picture of me choking one that was for Carl, right? If he can choke unicorns, I can choke gophers. But
nice.
So, yeah. So cool. So why don't we move into what I did with guns this week, and then we'll jump into our topic and get a bit more background on Daniel of the Shaw.
Sounds good.
Cool. So this week I continued to do some coaching. I picked up another student. It's kind of neat. Matthew, you remember the black badge we taught where my family doctor and his wife were involved?
I certainly do.
So kind of got my doctor and his wife into shooting, and she's an athlete. She does biathlon. She does marathons. She does triathlon stuff, and, she's competitive and she's hungry, and she's actually hired me to coach her as much as I can anyway. I mean, all I'm basically doing is teaching her the fundamentals and really going through reinforcing those and proper grip, proper stance, proper weight distribution on her feet, and trigger finger placement on the trigger and all that good stuff, and just taking the time to make sure that those fundamentals are really concrete and solid for her. So that's the second one now. So I spent I was on the range for 4 hours yesterday and did almost no shooting of my own. I was just there as a paid coach, so it's kind of cool, but it's kind of also cutting into my own training time that I need for the Nationals. So anyway, it's as we approach. Go ahead.
I'm used to that in the Marine Corps, doing that, being the guy out there. I never get to shoot, just train people all the time. But it's been weird coming back here, where I would go to the same range and I would shoot. I was going to say shoot myself, but I don't actually shoot myself. I catch myself saying that one all the time. I got to stop. I need a new term for that. But I was doing the thing, but. Now I got one student out there, and I'm trying to help him out, and there's a target there, and I want to demonstrate stuff, and I do that a little bit, and I shoot, but then I don't want to demonstrate it too fast, because then they're like, oh, you're just showing off, whatever. But it's strange whenever you're not shooting, but it's a good feeling, because I'm like, you know what? I am making money, and I'm not spending money on this ammo that I'm shooting.
It's true.
So that makes it a lot easier for me.
Well, this guy, Daniel, one of the students that I'm working with, says, well, every once in a while, you need to demonstrate the drill that we're about to run for me, I should be compensating you for that ammo. And I'm thinking, you're already paying me an hourly rate. Like, that's enough. But anyway, yeah, he felt bad because I was demonstrating techniques and using my ammo to do it. I'm like, no, I just need an excuse to shoot once in a while, so don't feel bad. I think I'll demonstrate. And then, like you said, you go too fast, and then they ask you to do it again. So... it's fun, though. I mean, I love teaching. I'm a school teacher by trade. I'm not sure if you know that or not. And I've got a coaching background in archery, so I'm kind of transferring those coaching skills over into IPSC.
So you're used to seeing that light bulb come on in heads, and you see when it clicks, and like when they've got it, you're used to seeing that. That's the funnest thing about teaching. It really is.
That's the aha moment. Yeah, we look for that. That's definitely when, that's the best part, when you know that you've – okay, you said it one way, it didn't work. You say it another way, you demonstrate, and all of a sudden it clicks. And then even better is then when you watch them do what you demonstrated, what you asked of them, and they're successful at it. So reloading, of course, 9mm and 40, right? And then I got my 3-gun on. Actually, I did do some shooting yesterday. Before they showed up, I was out with my shotgun, my AR, and my pistol, because on Saturday – it was the first 3-gun match of the season, so I'm really looking forward to that. Matthew, you're not gonna make that, or you
I won't make that. Sadly, I am I'm occupied otherwise this weekend.
That's too bad. It's gonna be when we do a three gun up here, Daniel. You know, are you familiar with IPSC? More of an IDPA guy, probably.
Yes, I've shot one USPSA match. That's kind of the same thing, right?
Well, USPSA is better because in USPSA multi-gun, you're allowed to use the three guns within the same stage. IPSC doesn't have true three gun. They have an IPSC rulebook for shotgun. They have an IPSC rulebook for rifle, and they have an IPSC rulebook for pistol. So if you go to an IPSC, and I'm using air quotes here, three-gun match, what you're going to have is a couple of shotgun stages run according to the IPSC rulebook, a couple of rifle stages run according to the rifle rulebook, and, of course, pistol. But you don't have the three mixed in together. So still a great opportunity to run the three guns, but I enjoy it more when you can actually transition, put one down, pick up the other one, in some cases reholster, you know, that's adds a more of a realistic element to it than just running the one and then transitioning to the next one. But I'm going to, you know, beggars can't be choosers, right? So
yep.
I'm certainly looking forward to getting down there. And then the next day, got a match here at my home club. So Friday night, I'll drive 4 hours, crash at family's place, shoot a match the next day, drive 4 hours back, and then shoot a match here the next morning. So
hey, while we're talking about competition, shooting, can I bring something up?
Absolutely.
That I've been battling with it and thinking about it for quite a while, but John and I just recorded a show about it night before last, but it hasn't been posted yet. I was working on it actually when I was reminded that my timing was off. I really had fun shooting IDPA, and I shot three matches, or really two and a half, because I had to leave because I had to travel a long ways from Florida back up to North Carolina, and it was going to be a long match. So I had to leave like halfway through it, but I enjoy shooting it, and I was even at to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm going to do this, and I think I can be good at it, and it's fun. And whenever you find something you're pretty decent at, and you have a lot of fun doing it, you know, you kind of jump all over it. And I was about to go into this thing head first, like practice and get everything down and get my scores and everything awesome. I went in whatever's undesignated or whatever it's called, IDPA match, and there was still like 20 of them in my category, and I beat some masterclass shooters and some other people in my same, you know, division in my first match. And I was shooting down in Florida with Masad Ayoub and Team Pro Arms and stuff, and they were, I don't know if they were just kind of patting me on the back, but they were like, wow, you're really good, that was great, you know, blah blah blah. They weren't gonna be mean to the guy who came down there, they just got out of the military, you know how some Americans are.
Yeah.
I was really ready to jump into this thing head first, and I went to a match. It was an Ironman, and I had to shoot, I think it was 10 stages, and a shotgun start. And everybody's going out to their thing and walking around, and they gave a little quick brief, not even really a safety brief or anything. And I had to grab a guy. I said, hey, man, what is a shotgun start? What do I do? I don't know anything. I went to a match and a half, and I had people babysitting me the whole day telling me what to do. I have no idea what's going on. So I went and did this thing, and I shot well, but I was just horrible at the end of the day because of all the procedurals I got. And the procedurals I got were using tried and true techniques that I had learned myself and taken away from, you know, combat experience and my friends' combat experience, the people at the schools that I went to, from people who had been there, who had been kicking in doors every day of their life. And these are the things that I learned from them that work in that situation. And I were using the techniques that I've been training people and doing myself for years. And I was being told that I was breaking the rules and I get lose 5 points or whatever. It was really discouraging for me. So I thought, do I need to sit here and really practice this IDPA thing and be good at IDPA? Or do I need to not do that? Because I don't think I'm a good enough shooter, and I can't flip that switch in my head to think mentally to go straight from that tactical side to the competition side. And it's a game. The rules don't need to change in the game. You know, it's the player needs to We stay within the rules the best we can to be good at the game. And I just realized that I have fun shooting IDPA, and I will go shoot IDPA, but I'm not going to care at all about procedurals. I'm going to go out there and fight the way I would fight, but have fun gaming the stage at the same time. That's kind of what I ended up doing, deciding.
Well, there's our topic. Thank you. No, that's awesome, because we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about practical shooting sports for training, and you just you said what Matthew and Owen and I have believed for a long, long time. And we don't get to shoot the way that you get to shoot in the real world. We don't get to carry. But we do have some experience with members of the RCMP, the Mounties, coming to shoot IPSC with us. And they say the same thing you say. A lot of this contradicts my training. And I mean, I can't undo my training because my training is what's going to keep me alive. Learning to be good at IDPA as a game is probably more detrimental than not shooting at all. Well, then not shooting at all, but see what I'm saying? Like, you know, if you just become an IDPA shooter and you think that's the end all and be all, and being a good IDPA shooter is going to get you out of a real conflict, you might be delusional.
Well, there's a lot of high-level IDPA shooters who feel that way.
Yeah. But they don't have the other end of the experience. They don't have the actual tactical or combat experience.
Right. And there is something to be said. I don't want to redo the episode we just did on Gunfighter Academy, but there's something to be said about being fast out of the holster and putting shots on target quickly and accurately.
Yes. And that's the other thing where these games do come in, is that you do get to practice those fundamentals.
And those are great skills to have.
Yeah, those types of skills translate to the real world, because if you can't get your gun out and get good, accurate shots when you need it most, I mean, what's the sense in even carrying one?
Yeah.
That's it. And cool. But most people in the defense, are we there yet? Are we ready to talk about this? Or are we?
just about. We're going to get there in 2 seconds.
Sorry.
Well, when we're talking about the game, you know, in you said you had beat some master shooters. Well, in IPSC, I think it's like D, C, B, A, Master, and Grandmaster. And I finally moved up, Matthew. I'm now officially, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I'm a C shooter.
Oh, wait. Did we get this videoed? Is this verified? Did Tommy do your scoring? I'm just checking.
No, I did all the scoring, dude.
Oh, Tommy did the scoring via webcam.
So how come you're not a Grandmaster if you did your own scoring? Have you learned nothing?
I guess not. I have to take a book from the, or a page from the book of Tommy.
If you've just moved up to C, holy, I don't want to know where I'm at. So I'm just going to not shoot any classifiers and carry on thinking that I'm all that and not B.
Yeah, I moved to C, but it's still pretty bad. You just suck a little less, I guess.
Just a little bit less.
Yeah.
Now second loser instead of first loser.
Yeah, that's right. Two other quick things. We had the coolest prom night photo shoot in my backyard tonight. My cousin Cameron, who I got into IPSC and have been taking to the range and stuff a lot lately, he and his prom date wanted to know if they could come over and have some photos taken before going to prom with some of my guns. So I'm like, sure. And he's like, no, it's better than you think. My tux is camo and her dress is Hunter Orange.
That's awesome.
Sure enough, they roll up and she's head to toe in Hunter Blaze Orange prom dress, and he's got the mossy oak camo pattern going on. So we put him in the backyard and we started off with some more, you know, regular traditional looking hunting guns, a lever action 30-30, a camo bolt action 223 with a scope on it. And then we quickly progressed to the AR-15s and the Glocks. So we snapped a few pictures off of that. So that was pretty cool. One last thing I want to talk about before we move into our main topic and introduce Mr. Shaw properly here is Slamfire t-shirts are now being ready, or we're ready to take orders for Slamfire t-shirts. There's a sample of what one of the t-shirts sort of looks like on our Facebook page, but then Matthew, after I had one made, decided it wasn't good enough and totally redesigned it.
Actually, Jewel told me to.
And I'm glad you listened to her. You didn't listen to me when I first brought up the concerns, and you were like, no, it's fine, get it made.
That's because I didn't. Yeah. You know how it is.
Yeah, I know how it is. You're not behind something until you're behind it, and then when you're behind it, look out. So, Slamfire t-shirt orders. If you want to see what the new one looks like, Matthew put a template up on our Facebook page. So if you want one, send us a Facebook message with your size, your address, and you can send an EMT for $20 to trevor.furlot@nbed.nb.ca. And when they're ready to be shipped out, we'll get back to you with a shipping quote.
Should we tell people where all the proceeds are going?
No, we're going to put them in our Swiss account, aren't we?
Our offshore Swiss account, that's right.
I got two comments here. I like the t-shirt. I'm going to need one of those next time I make Gunfighter Cast. I'll send you guys one. You send me one of these.
Beauty.
Nice. Deal. Like a deal? It's on there. You can't say no.
No, that's right.
That's why it works this way.
It's part of podcast history.
And I'm only one person, and you guys get two shirts, so you win. And also, these kids in
that
this picture
doesn't get a shirt.
That I'm looking at on Facebook for prom.
Yeah.
They're way too young to be going to prom, man. Am I getting that old?
Yeah, sorry. That's the way it is, man. We keep getting older. They stay the same age.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what a couple 18-year-olds look like in Canada.
That's a good-looking shirt, though.
Yeah, it's not bad. What else we got? I think that's it. So, Daniel, why don't you give us a little bit of background about what your podcaster, your show with John McGregor, is called Gunfighter Cast. Recently retired from the Marines, spent a lot of time in Japan. But maybe, how long were you in the Marines and what's the story with Gunfighter Cast? And then we'll talk a little bit about training, MAG 40. And then we want to talk about your new academy, Paratus, which means always ready. Is that correct?
Being prepared or training so that you are prepared. It cool. translates to like three or four different things, depending on what context you use. I don't speak Latin.
He didn't pronounce it right then, probably. But you wouldn't know because you don't speak Latin either. So, need Owen on. Owen could be on. He'd be like, it's Paratus or something.
I pressed the audio button on Wikipedia and a couple of different websites and heard them say it. So I was like, you know what? They all said the same. It must be right.
So is it Paratus?
Paratus.
Paratus. Paratus.
There you go, Matthew. Suck it. I got it right.
Yeah, I'm going to edit that out so that it sounds like you didn't.
Perfect. So, Daniel, tell us a little bit about yourself, your time in the Marines, and Gunfighter Cast, and anything else you want to talk about, and then we'll get into training.
All right. Well, I think you get my name down by now, Daniel Shaw. I joined the Marine Corps back in 1997. I spent 16 years on active duty as an infantryman, and I did...
you are old, man.
Yeah, right.
Old? You're not Stan old, but you're like Carl old for sure.
Just
yep, Carl old. But 16 years, and I joined right out of high school. Like, I graduated high school on May 24th. I was at Paris Island getting yelled at on the yellow footprints on May 26th. And part of that because I had to spend one day in the entrance place and then the next day driving down there. So it was like immediately. I didn't have any time to get into any trouble or have any fun. You know, just went straight there out of high school. And I just recently retired on March 31st, officially. And I had a great time. I learned a lot of things in the Marine Corps. Learned what I like in life, what I want to do in life, what I enjoy, what I don't enjoy about jobs and other things. But it was a great experience. And, lots of other benefits that I could go on and on about. But it's like anything. You know, you hate it some days and love it other days. But, sure. I had some rough times in other countries, Iraq and such, but also some great times over there too. So, a lot of rewarding experiences that helped me, I guess, make me the person I am today. That really gets me active in what's happening in our country and everything. When I say our, we're obviously. The reason I say that is because I made a joke. There was a Canadian band. I got to go on a tangent for a second.
No problem. We don't do that at all normally, but we'll let you do it.
I've listened to Slam Fire Radio
first.
All right, you're almost gun dudes, but not quite. Your tangent level needs work.
Okay, we'll work on it. Yeah, we'll try to bring it up.
It's getting there. It's getting there. So, all for just a second. We're in Japan, riding down the road, and there's this Canadian country band. That's really popular in the U.S. And my wife and I knew they were Canadian. But they were coming over to Okinawa to sing for the U.S. military and do their little show and everything. So the guy on the radio is complete idiot, moron, army cat who runs the radio. Is like a DJ. They have like they try to find the dumbest people on the island and they have them run the radio stations and be the DJ just to annoy everybody all day long. And that's kind of how they do it, I think. But he was asking them these silly questions like, "So you're here because you love our country? Or you love the country, or because you're a patriot and you want to give back to the military and stuff like that?" And he was just asking all these questions, like where he knew that they were from Canada, but he just wasn't putting the two and two together. That we're great allies, but they're not flying a U.S. flag here. You know, they're Canadians, dude. It was just, it was like listening to a train wreck, man. It was so bad. You could tell that the band members were like, they just wanted to say, dude, are you an idiot? They were nice guys, and they did.
They're just smiling and nodding at him and trying to appease him, yeah.
Yeah, like what?
Well, it's because they were Canadian.
Yeah, that's what they do.
They probably apologized to him for not being American. Well, we're sorry we're not American.
Well, the problem is the lack of international thinking that a lot of people have, especially around the area where I live right now. They're like, you mean there's something outside of this city that we live in, this town or this state? You mean there's people that speak and sound just like us, but they're not from our country? Like,
no.
It blows their mind. You know, it's like, wow.
I had an experience with that once in university. I drove to a town in Maine, and I drove there from Fredericton, New Brunswick. And then a guy was over there from Vermont, and he asked me how long it took. He said, wow, you're from Canada. How long did it take you to get here? I'm like, 4 hours. Well, that can't be. It took me 6 hours to get here. Uh-huh. But I'm from America, and you're from Canada. How could it have possibly taken you? Oh, man, just look at a map. I'm closer to this town than you are. No wow. concept, right? It's like the American border and a big bubble, and everybody else is far away. That was this guy's reality.
It's crazy.
It's funny. So, Daniel, while you were in the Marines, obviously you progressed through and started to do some training, and then you became a master instructor. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, it's a title that's given at Security Forces Training Company. So what I did there was train the Marines to go to the fleet anti-terrorism security teams. You may have seen them on the news popping around to embassies whenever there's, you know, terrorist attacks or high threat of terrorist or high likelihood of a terrorist incident. They will go reinforce an embassy. Their expertise is expeditious site security. They go and reinforce things and make them safe. If there's a nuke sub going to go pull up somewhere and change out nuke rods, they're going to go provide security for it. The same Marines that come through that school go to the White House Communication Center in Camp David. They're the ones that you see coming again whenever the President of the United States gets off an aircraft or whatever. You'll see them out there, and they're the other guards. Some of them go out there to look just to look pretty, but some of them are actually you know, practicing running guns to, you know, providing protection. And they have to come through our school, and I taught weapons there. I was a weapons team leader, and I had about 12 instructors, and my job was to get 60 students at a time and run them through about a 6-week shooting package and do that. And being a master instructor means you can teach all curriculum at the highest, you know, level possible. And all curriculum would be pistol, rifle, shotgun, medium, heavy machine guns, and all that cool stuff, and a little bit of non-lethal. And that's what I did there. But, you know, I started out – what was funny, what got me – I guess that's probably the best thing for me to talk about. What got me into training, folks, was when I first came in the Marine Corps, I was 17 years old. And I was assigned to Dragon's platoon. The old Dragon missile is the worst missile ever. It takes like 12 seconds to travel 1,000 kilometers. And whenever by the time it gets to the tank, it's 4 killing tanks. That tank's already put like 10 rounds on you and you're dead. And it's really old technology. So that platoon
sounds
is not
Canadian.
Usually, so that platoon's not usually used for killing tanks because they know that the tanks are going to kill them. So they made our platoon the security element for the Maritime Special Purpose Force. So next thing I know, I'm shooting 1,000 rounds a day for 6 months straight, blowing up doors, ballistic entry in doors, mechanical entry into doors, rescuing hostages, and all kind of cool stuff, you know, training.
Well, that's rough.
And getting on C-130s, landing a C-130, taking over airfields, getting on helicopters, fast roping on the decks of ships and taking over ships and oil platforms and all kind of stuff. It was awesome. You know, wearing plain clothes, riding in the back of Ryder trucks, and the pizza delivery guy sets a charge and blows a door and we all run in. You know, crazy stuff like that. I was like, wow, this is what I joined the Marine Corps for. This is awesome. But while I was doing that, I realized that there were turds, like horrible people that were just garbage at life, garbage at fighting, garbage at everything. And I realized that I needed to choose the people that I liked and wanted to hang around. And it was all about, you know, relationships and who I put myself near. And I realized the guys that were really good and knew what they were doing and they were becoming better and they were learning. Their shooting was awesome and they were always trying to be better and faster. Their tactics, they could tell you every tactics known to man and every response to every type of thing you could think of. And I put myself around all those men and ended up, you know, kind of getting in the click with them and just stealing everything off of them, every single thing in their brains. And I did that at every unit I went to for like my first 2-3 units. Then I ended up at Paris Island teaching entry level. These are like high school kids that need to learn to shoot guns because they're joining the Marine Corps and they're at recruit training, basically all that age range. And so I ended up being an instructor there. And that was the higher echelon of instructors that would get like 80 students and they'd be by themselves with them. And so I started hanging out with the really good ones and learning everything they were doing. Next thing I know, I was like the first corporal rank in 6 years to become one of those guys because they all respected me. And you know, I'd stolen everything from them was basically what I was doing. And next thing I know, every unit I would go to after that, as soon as I would get there, I would start talking to certain people and they're like, oh, well, you're going to run our range. Oh, you're going to do this. So I became the instructor like everywhere I would go. Even if I was in an operational unit, I was always, hey, we're doing ranges. Shaw, can you come schedule this and, you know, get us some curriculum and write up us whatever we're going to do on the range, a whole training plan? I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. Get something good. So that kind of just ended up happening that way. So I go to that security forces school, and when I'm there, I'm taking the school to go to that FAS platoon or to go to White House Communication Center or whatever. And they're like, yeah, you're not going to any of those. You're staying here and being an instructor. And it just kind of happened that way for like my last 7 years in the Marine Corps. I just couldn't do anything fun anymore. I had to teach the whole time. And I realized, you know, I love this. And that's kind of where it ended up. And that's what I want to do outside of the Marine Corps, my civilian life.
Nice. Oh, so it was the last 7 years was just nothing but training.
Yeah. I mean, I had some training jobs before that, prior to that. But yeah, just the last 7 years consecutive, it was like no matter what I did, it was just like, oh, no, you're not doing that. We need you to help teach. Yeah, it was just.
Yep. And so what's the Japan connection? How did you end up stationed in Japan? How long were you there for?
3 years and like a month. My wife and I had this crazy idea. You know, we didn't have any. I have my son that stays with his mom in the wintertime and stays with me in the summer, but he wasn't with us at the time. We're like, you know what? Let's go to a foreign country and just have fun. Well, we got orders. And a year later, when it was time to execute those orders to Japan, we were all excited. About 2 months prior, wow, you're pregnant. Wife got pregnant, and we had this crazy idea of going over there and partying and having fun and just jumping on an airplane and traveling all over Asia and stuff. Yeah, it didn't happen.
Oh.
But it was a great surprise, though.
Cause yeah, well, exactly, right?
We have a three-year-old little boy named Gunner right now, which is, you know, awesome.
Very nice. That's an appropriate name for sure.
Absolutely. Nice. But yeah, and we hated every second of being in Japan. It was not at all like we expected. But I had a lot of good times over there because I had the opportunity to go to a lot of different foreign countries and not only train their lower ranking guys in individual skills, but I was briefing, you know, higher echelon generals and colonels and you know, upper management, I guess you could say, in tactics and how to employ their forces better in, you know, big large scale type warfare and also small unit tactics. And it was really cool getting that opportunity to do that. And I never would have had that opportunity, but I was part of a small team of like 9 infantry staff NCOs, staff non-commissioned officers, in a land of all people who are the opposite of infantrymen. It's all logistics stuff. So we were like the experts on everything. When it was time to talk about something like that, they would get one of us in or to fly out somewhere and, you know, do the briefs or whatever we're talking about. So it was pretty cool, that part of it was.
That would be, but the whole idea of Japan, though, for somebody who's blue-blooded and, you know, lives the Second Amendment, loves to carry a gun, that must have been strange to have to leave the base unarmed.
It was a transition, man. It was tough. There's not a lot of violent crime over there outside of domestic violence. There is some, and they're really bad about hiding it. They don't report it. They will not let it go. They really cover it up a lot, and I've seen that firsthand. But there's a lot of knife stuff going on over there and a lot of domestic stuff that happens and murders and stuff. But it's when I realized that I was pretty much safe was when I saw all these kids with cartoon hair and they were just wearing their big moon tennis shoes, whatever, and the girls looked more masculine than the men did. And I really think that probably 70% of the men on that island, I could be at the bottom of the island, I could have them all line up, and I could probably kick everybody's ass. You know, and I'm not even the greatest hand-to-hand fighter. Yeah. But that kind of made me feel like, you know what, maybe this – it helped me a little bit. You know, I'll put it that way.
They really did turn into a nation of pacifists, didn't they?
You know, it's sad. And people say that, oh, man, Japan, this and that. Like, you know, they're our ally. They're a great ally. But it's man, I don't fear them. You know what I mean? And yeah. I've trained them and I've trained with them. I have a lot of respect for the people up on the island of Hokkaido, the North Island is just below Russia, where it's crazy miserable weather up there. I went up there and trained for a month, and I trained some of their snipers and trained some of their regular Rangers, ground forces, and that's where the men are, man. That's I realized that. I said, you know what, all the men, I did this when I'd already been there for about 2.5 years, and I was like, I've been wondering where all the men are in Japan, and this is where they're at. Okay. There's no doubt. Those guys, I would not mind rolling into something with, because they were all about it, being they had the pain tolerance, and they were tough, and they wanted to train, they wanted to fight, they wanted to do it. Those are good people.
Cool. There's basically no civilian firearms ownership.
There is a Japanese IDPA, from what I understand on the internet, but I couldn't find it anywhere.
Airsoft, I'm pretty sure it's all airsoft.
Yeah, airsoft. Yeah, they do airsoft IPSC as well. IPSC actually has an IPSC Action Air rulebook to govern IPSC airsoft for countries that aren't allowed to have actual firearms.
Japan has a long history of being disarmed. Yeah. Most of our martial arts come from disarming the peasants.
Exactly. Right.
They had to learn how to fight with certain tools and things, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Let's switch gears a little bit, Daniel, and talk about Mag 40. When I was there last year, I thought you were going to be there right up until I arrived, and they were like, no, Shaw can't make it. Were you supposed to go again last year?
I was planning on going up until toward the last minute.
Okay. That's why I thought you were – all right.
Around October – no, what was it? It was the beginning of September. A message came out. And we kind of thought it might become, we weren't sure. Like, hey, you guys can retire if you've been in for this amount of time and you have this MOS. And that came out right before that. And I had a lot of stuff going on right then, trying to get all that sorted and get all my stuff in so I could retire. Yep. And if I'd have went to Mag 40, I might would have missed a window, because it was a very short window to get all your stuff in. And that's pretty much the reason why I didn't make it. That and probably a little bit of money was an issue too, but it was mostly the old I'll take care of that.
Get the ducks in a row sort of thing.
But so, I wanted to go. How fun is that Mag 40 with the gun dudes, man?
Look, I'm trying to get back. The trucker is going to hold one in May in Arkansas. And I've asked him to keep me in the loop as to the exact dates and cost and whatnot. And if I get enough points, I'm going to fly down on points and attend another one. It's not going to be with the gun dudes, but I mean, it'll be with Chaz, and he's not offensive or anything. Not too bad, anyway. So
I like Chaz.
For sure.
Well, I'm talking to Stan and Tommy right now, back and forth for text, and we're working out some details about me going out there and hosting one of Paratus's courses out in Utah.
Now that's a different. Well, you got to let me know those dates too, then, Daniel.
I definitely will.
That might be cool, too. So let me ask you, how hard was it, how do I phrase this?
Ask him the question. I don't know if that would work.
Is the qualifier in Mag 40, in your opinion, difficult?
No.
Okay.
But I shot, and I didn't even remember until Tommy said it the other day when we were on the phone. Because he remembers what I shot.
Which of course is funny. He does.
But I shot a 296. And what made it difficult for me, and the reason I shot a 296, is because I had to shoot this silly position called the Chapman stance and this silly position called the Weaver.
Yep.
And
so you were like me. You went in there being isosceles and left isosceles.
Dude, I had a brand new gun that I'd spent $1,200 on and had all these little tricks done to it and everything else I wanted just to like make it super cool and super tactical, awesome and everything.
Yeah.
And the first shot I got to fire out of it was Mass was like, all right, now we're gonna work on the Weaver, and that was the first time I ever got to shoot this new gun, was from the Weaver position. It was like I sold it. I mean, I got rid of it. it was scarred. After
it was
that.
Scarred. It was done. Yep. Yeah. No, I fired this Weaver. It's done.
Its cherry was not popped properly.
Not only did we have to shoot Weaver and Chapman, we had to do them all from 15 as well, and it was the last. You had to do 6 rounds from each of those positions, isosceles, Weaver, and Chapman from 15, and I had a makeup to do. Because during the practice, I was like, man, this is taking forever. You know, shooting IPSC, you shoot fast. So I would shoot a nice steady rhythm and be done. And I'm looking up and down the line, and I got time for a cigarette. Guys are still shooting. So I thought to myself, I'm really going to slow down when it comes time to shoot the actual qualifier. And I'm just going to do my best at this thing. I'm really going to slow it down. I'm really going to focus hard on the front sight, focus on the fundamentals. And in the first six shots of weekend, I didn't get my last one off. So every position after that, I was carrying that in the back of my head, right? When I get to 15, I've got to make up that last shot. So when I got back there, the plan was do the Weaver first because it's my weakest, then the Chapman, and finish strong with the isosceles. But that being said, Daniel, I thought you shot a 300.
No, I shot a 296. Nope, I didn't get the 300.
Oh, that's why I asked you if you thought it was hard.
I guess it was a little bit harder for him than it was for you, huh, Trev?
Well, we're just going to change the subject.
Oh, Trev, did you hit a 300?
Yeah.
Awesome.
You were the only one there, the only Canadian and the only perfect score.
Yeah, other than Mass, of course, right?
Well, yeah.
I had a 7-inch group, you had a 5-inch group, so I didn't
see,
get
I learned something a long time ago. When you're in this world, I grew up around, when I say grew up, from the time I was 17 till, you know, I just retired at 33, that's when I grew up. You know, I did a little bit of growing until I hit 17, got a little home training, but I didn't grow up until I was 17 and, you know, spent time. Every single day is a competition. Every single day is a penis measuring contest. Every day is the day that you get punched in the face. You know, that's the world that I lived in for so long. It's like, I leave my ego at home everywhere I go, man. There's people out there better than me. There's people out there that will, you know, tear me up in a fist fight in a heartbeat that are smaller than me. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't even care, man. You know,
you never know, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You never know. All right, cool. Well, no, that sort of blew the whole thing because I was like, Daniel shot a 300. I shot a 300. We can talk about actually if it was challenging or not. But because not to take away from anybody, it's not my thing. I'm proud of the fact that I shot a 300. I'm looking at my target right now. It's hanging on my wall right next to my computer. I'm incredibly proud that I went down there representing Canada, shot against all those excellent shooters. And, you know, oh, I got the Canuck jokes when I was down there. Don't worry. Like, my target says 300, eh? You know, like. So, you know, but again, not to take away from anybody, but I thought it was an easy qualifier. And I don't know that it necessarily needed to be any more difficult, but I guess I came home and I said to a lot of the guys that I shoot IPSC with, and Matthew and Owen, and I'm like, I know eight people without even batting an eye that could shoot a 300. I'm sure of it. So we're going to find out, actually, Matthew. We're going to shoot some of the qualifier when we get out to the charity shoot.
I'm looking forward to it.
The qualifier is basically, it's based on a law enforcement type qualification.
Yeah, he told me it was a modified FBI qualifier.
And if that's something that John and I talk about, John being a law enforcement officer, John McGregor, my co-host in Gunfighter Cast, if the listeners don't know, it's
they better.
There's a common misconception in the United States that cops are just this end-all, be-all, you know, magicians with firearms, that they know everything about them, and they
that's not
are
just an American
the experts.
Thing.
And
yeah, no, that's
wrong.
Definitely a Canadian thing too.
Like you going out there and shooting a 300, you're probably out shooting 80%, maybe more than that, law enforcement officers that I've trained with or seen. Yeah, you know, it's
same here. I mean, a friend of mine who introduced me to IPSC, he's the instructor for the RCMP for this region, and he's the one that takes them out when they need to qualify. And if they fail to qualify, they can come back three times, paid, mind you, to just come out and try and get qualified with their handgun. Three cracks at it, right? That being said, they're not really given time to practice. It's a miserable gun to shoot. It's got a 12-pound trigger pull. It's double action every pull. It's an incredibly hard gun to shoot accurately. But their definition of accuracy and ours probably differ as well, though. I think we have a higher standard of what we accept as accurate than they do. I come from a background where I need to hit a target the same size as the projectile, and I need to do it 60 times in a row. Sometimes I could do it, sometimes I couldn't. Most times I couldn't. Then you go to IPSC, and all of a sudden the margin of error is huge. But I still have that mentality of like a bullseye shooter, where I need to get it dead center every time. If I could shoot snake eyes all day long. I mean, that would be great, but we just don't need it in this sport. But still, in the back of my mind, I'm driven to be as accurate as possible all the time, and it's never good enough, you know?
Yep.
So, Daniel, let's talk about your new training academy. You're home, you're retired, and now you're going to be self-employed. And what's going to be the main focus? What kind of – is there going to be like – is it self-defense? Is it like Mag 40? Is it security? Who are you going to train? What are you going to train them to do?
You know, that's the best questions, man, because I don't know. You know, just to be 100% honest, right now I'm really trying to find what I want to do. And I've got two courses designed that I've got them written up, and I expect them to change in the future. I really do, because I want to be a learning organization where I take everything that I know and everything that I continue to learn and mix that into the context of being in front of these civilian shooters or law enforcement shooters and their learning and finding out what works best. So right now, my level one handgun course, which is the one I've got scheduled, I got three of them scheduled right now. All the cool names of stuff are taken. So I went with vitals. So I got handgun vitals 1, rifle vitals 1 and 2, and that kind of thing.
Sorry, that's pretty cool, actually.
Well, I wanted to say this is what you need to know. You know, I think it does that.
Oh, I thought it's where the rounds needed to go in the vitals.
That you can take it either way. That's fine.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, I like that way better. Yeah.
And that's good. But the handgun vitals 1 class, I've got to start somewhere. I have a lot of people that are just entry level that are coming in, they want to shoot and they want to learn. But then there's also a lot of people out there who don't need to learn how to load and unload a handgun. You know, that we can go over it briefly, but we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. Not like I'm teaching a concealed carry course down here or something like that where I need to go into detail about all this stuff forever. No. So what I did with the handgun vitals 1 class is I made it like the prerequisite for handgun vitals 2. And handgun vitals 1, I refer to it as being 80% defensive shooting, the things that would be involved in a defensive shooting type scenario, and 20% tactical. Because I think people are kind of cheating themselves when they go take a course and all they're doing is everything is at 5 to 7 yards. Yeah, that's the distance that we're typically going to be in a defensive type situation at a gas station or, you know, at our home or outside somewhere when we're out and about or out in the boat. Had to do it once. But
You've actually been very good about that whole thing. I got to say, it's surprising. You snuck one in, though. All right.
Yeah, sorry. That's not what I'm. I think there's a lot of people who do that well out there training. They teach the defensive type situation. I think there's people that do it horribly out there. But I want to do what I do and find what I do and what the students need. And it's going to be fun. But also, what I've been known for in the Marine Corps is you're going to go out there, you're going to think that you're going to go do a regular old rifle range or pistol range, but then by the end of the day, everybody's like, dude, I have never done anything like that before in my life. I am mentally drained. I am physically drained. I realized that what you said at the beginning about my gear being set up wrong, you were right, and I was arguing with you, but yeah, I need to redo all this stuff.
Yeah, all of a sudden they need to actually run the gear.
Yeah.
And that's when they realize it ain't working.
And that's where I want to go, but I've got to test the water a little bit to see how far I can get there because there's all different types that are going to be in these courses. And I got to make sure there's something that's the best mix for what I do for the clientele that I have. So I'm really trying to find all that, and I'm just kind of testing the water, and I'm going to push it and see how far I can go. I want to make it to the point where when you're signing up for Handgun Vitals 2, that means, one, you are telling me that you are physically fit enough to take a somewhat physically rigorous course. Mm-hmm. You are mentally fit enough that you can make decisions under stress, tired, breathing heavy, heart beating quickly, and do that. I don't want to do intertrainment where we just go to the line and people are doing cool reloads and they're having fun and they're talking and they're saying check and looking around and doing Costa flips and stuff like that. Not knocking it, you know, all respect for the guy. But, you know, that's not my thing. And no. I don't want it to become that. And not saying that what they're doing is all entertainment. Not at all, because they're using practical terms. The communication that they're using is the stuff that I grew up using, and I want to incorporate the communication. That's going to be in Handgun Vitals 1 as well, how to communicate. Like you guys say, you know, Matt and Trevor, you guys, if something happened, civil unrest, zombies, whatever happens in Canada, I'm sure you guys probably have some plan that you've at least talked about it at some point of linking up and working together to protect your families, right?
Yeah, I mean, Owen and Matthew more so than me because they're a lot closer. They get to actually do some training on the range. But, I mean, yeah, I'm not too far out of the loop, but you're right. They spend time on the range, and they learn each other's movements. They learn how to move together, talk together. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what this is going to do. And maybe them and their buddy isn't going to be there in that same course, but if just one of you guys is there and – you're learning the communication that I have learned from the Marine Corps and, you know, combat operations, that we've learned to streamline the verbiage, clear and concise. This is what we're going to do because of this situation. Some of the things you've never thought of, and some of the things I'd never thought of until it happened to me. And we realized that, you know, we need to talk here. We need something going on in this situation. And so one of you is in that class, and they're going to come back and bring that back to their buddies. And that's fine. It doesn't belong to me. It's not proprietary. You know, take it back, tell your friends, work on it together on the range. Because if something, I don't only want to prepare someone for that situation where somebody's like, hey, give me all your money. You know, I think that our world is in a situation right now where we need good guys like us that are armed. There may be a time where we're really going to have to be protecting our family in an engagement that's not just at that Listerine distance and last half a second. It may be a 2 or 3 minute firefight. And if that happens, and all you've trained for is shooting at 5 yards, drawing and getting on the sights really quick, you're missing a very broad picture. And that's kind of what I talk about with the competition guys who do the easy part really well. They come out of the holster and they put sights on target and they run through that course and they hit it and they do it really well. They do those awesome. They're great at it. But if that competition shooter was going to say, oh, I'm ready to go kick in and blow up a door and go into, you know, wherever and kill Osama bin Laden with, you know, DevGru, then you know, you're missing a lot of the other things that are going along with it, a lot of them, especially when you're talking about a team environment. Lots of things change. And I equate it to being like a NASCAR driver who can get on a closed track and turn left really well.
You're making a left turn!
and they're so good at that, they think, oh, I'm ready to go lead mounted operations and convoy operations in red zones in Afghanistan. You know, you're missing a lot of the picture. Yeah, you drive great. You're awesome, but so much else in there.
Narrow scope, right?
Yeah, I mean, I want to introduce a lot of those little things, and it's the small things, and I tell people that all the time, and I've said it in Gunfighter Cast 1,000 times, I'm sure you guys heard it. You know, I've never been bit by an elephant, but I got bit by a mosquito a little while ago. You know, it's just the little things that are going to end up getting you, and we need to pay attention to those details. And, you know, everything's basic, and, you know, we just apply those basics, you know, the faster and better we can, and it, solve problems along the way.
It sounds like it's exactly where I want to be because, you know, I've been to Mag 40. I shot a 300. I can shoot my gun. But that's a very, very small part of it. You know, MASS goes into situational awareness and what and how your body might react and when the adrenaline starts pumping and things like that. But being able to shoot the gun at a paper target is such a minute part of the whole thing. Running around an IPSC course and shooting at targets is great. But if I was ever to, I mean, an IPSC shooter, if that's all they know and they ever got into a gunfight,
they'd be shooting for score. All right, 2 alpha, 2 alpha, I'm going to take out that guy in the back to get a better mag change if I go over this way first.
Yeah, there's nothing tactical about it. You get yourself killed, right? I'd like to take a training course. I mean, obviously, you can't be prepared for when somebody shoots back at you. I don't know how you get prepared for that in the Marine Corps or in any courses that you teach. But, you know, is it fair to say you're not going to know how you're going to react in that situation until you're in that situation, and you just hope that training kicks in and you see your front sight and make bad things go away?
I hate to do this, but I got to tell the same story I tell every freaking time because it always comes up in every show when they're talking about that, when bullets are coming at you and, you know, your first taste of combat, I guess you could call it.
Well, you haven't told it on this show yet,
okay,
so please,
we'll do it.
Go ahead.
So the that first time, man, it was huge for me. I wrote a little short story about it, actually, and I'm just going to put it up on an ebook, and I haven't got that far yet, but I may one day.
yeah, please do it.
Because I need to make money wherever I can, man. But, it's pretty significant for me. It was one of the first thing when somebody asked me about significant events in my life, that was one of the most significant. And I've had other things in Iraq in combat where, you know, I received awards for, you know, rescuing someone under fire and stuff, and a really nice award. And then I even had him later on say, tell my wife that, you know, I wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for your husband. And there's really no other greater honor than that right there. Yes. But this outweighs that, this story. And because it was just one of the, it was the time that I actually got tested. The first time that I was really tested, can I do this? Will I do it? Do I have the fortitude to do it? And we were riding into Nazaria. At the time, it was the bloodiest battle since Vietnam for the U.S. military. And I don't know if you remember all that stories, and we had Jessica Lynch was captured, and they took a wrong turn and all that craziness.
Yep.
Well, we
took a left turn.
Something like that. We went in there to spearhead the attack on Nazaria, and there was just, we were riding around with – we were a platoon of infantrymen and amphibious assault vehicles riding with a platoon or a company of tanks. These tanks are invincible, and they know that, and they will take us little soft-skinned infantry guys everywhere because they think they can't get hurt, and they forget that us infantry guys are hanging out with them. So, oh, there's people shooting over here and fighting really hard. Let's go. So that's kind of how it was all day on March 23rd, 2003 for me. So first time we pull up somewhere, like I get a call. I've got the headset on the radio. Vic Commander says, Shaw, you need to get your guys out. Everybody dismount. There's a building out to the left. We need to put a rocket in it. We're taking a lot of fire from it and the building next to it. So make sure you get some suppression on it and hit it with a rocket. So I'm like, all right. We can't see anything. There's no windows in this thing. The ramp's coming down slowly, and I'm fighting my way to get to the front to be the first one off, and I'm yelling at team leaders, telling them what we're going to do. And I was giving them all their own little job to do, where they're going to set up when they get out, and with the direction where we think the fight is, because I didn't really, I just had a description in my headset, you know, the guy talking to me. The ramp's almost down. And I look around, everybody's scared to death, man. Like, we're kids, dude. I was a sergeant at the time, and I was, like, the oldest one there, and I was, like, 25 or something. I guess probably my math is a little bit off. It was 2003, so, yeah, I was 23. And so that ramp was almost down, and I realized that I got to take a step. It's time for me to step out here into this light where I hear gunfire everywhere, and there's dust everywhere, there's fighting going on out here. I am relatively safe inside this vehicle. Do I want to go expose my body to this and die right here? And I started thinking, first thing that's going to happen is I'm going to go out here, I'm going to turn left, because I am an ambi-turner, and I'm going to turn left, and I'm going to look down, and I'm going to see my guts come out in front of me, because I'm going to get shot in the back or shit somewhere. I was visualizing myself getting shot in the face. I was visualizing all these bad things happening to me.
Probably counterproductive.
Mm-hmm. And we call that precognition. And it's not like the precognition that Minority Report had. It's the bad kind of precognition. And I recognized what I was doing based on people that I'd put myself around, like we talked about earlier, that had been in those situations before. And when I recognized it, I was able to put it somewhere and not focus on it anymore. And I realized that all these younger guys around me were doing the same thing. So I started putting on some, excuse me, some false motivation. And then next thing you know, they're all fired up, ready to go kill folks. And the ramp's down. I take my first step. And then it was just game on. After that, you couldn't keep me in that vehicle, man. It was just like, let me out, let's go. And it was that's like the turning point. It really was. It was very, very significant for me.
I can imagine.
Yeah, that moment in time where you know you can actually step up and do this, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and once you get past that first hurdle, I mean, that's usually, I know for me, if I'm doing anything that's, I mean, I've never been in combat, but if I'm doing anything that I've never done before, if I view it as, okay, this is going to be a challenge, this is going to be hard, I don't want to do the first step. I don't want to start. But then I find that once I have, oh, well, here we are. I can do this. You know, it's just getting past that first, you know, the first time, like you said, out that door. You know, once you get out there, then you're like, oh, yeah, this is fun. Let's play.
In a weird way, it is fun, you know, and in a weird way, you're like, and when it's over, you're like, holy crap, how am I still alive? Why did I do that? I could have died so easy. But what tying that into what we were just talking about, little details that you hear people, I'm sure you've had people tell you before, make sure you look at the target the whole time you're reloading because they might advance on you. And, or maybe, what if you're behind cover? You know, should I be looking at the target the whole time? Well, if you're behind cover and there's bullets impacting that cover right next to where your head is, where you're going to look out,
I probably wouldn't look around.
You're a better man than me because I don't look out until those bullets stop hitting that cover. And then I'm like, okay, where'd he go? Oh, he's shooting again. There's a muzzle flash. Let me shoot it a couple times before I get back behind the cover again. You know, it's not – it's these people who will tell you, like, oh, you got to watch him the whole time. Like, yeah, okay, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do that. But yeah. I will also say that I can picture this. If I'm in the mall and a guy starts shooting up the place, my wife and kids are with me, I can say with 100% certainty that – there is going to be a split second, a moment in time where I think about just bolting, where I think about just running. And that's a pretty honest thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really, after seeing the things I've seen and done the things I've done, I'd really rather not to get shot at again. I'd rather get shot at than IED'd again. I've kind of had enough of that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is going to be a moment in time, and recognize it. It's going to – every single – our human instinct tells us to stay alive, survival, survival, survival. We got to put that back to protect other people. So it's that's going to be the first instinct. That is animal instinct. That's human instinct. That's initial. So I think that's one of the things that I really took away from it and helped me prepare for, you know, future, and maybe hopefully me talking to other people will help them prepare for the incident they get into so they can recognize some of those things and they can get past it and do what they need to do.
Yeah, if they know it's coming, you tell them this is what's going to happen, right? Kind of like when Masab was talking about that adrenaline dump and what to expect, right? Expect your vision to narrow. Expect your extremities to tremor a little bit. Then when it happens, you're like, okay, this is normal. This is supposed to be happening. I can accept it and move past it because it's normal, right?
As long as you remember the pre-visualization of things, you know, it may sound a little bit silly, but
It's not.
I work in the same environment Trevor does, in a school, and I've mentally gone through what would I do if somebody came in shooting right now, or you know what would I do if you know a student you know goes berserk, or you know if you think about these things, if you think about okay, well I'm in the cafeteria and there's two exits here, what would I do right now if somebody you know came in with a baseball bat swinging? What would I do? And so you run through these different scenarios in your head, and whether or not that would actually help, at least I'm thinking about what could happen, and I'm not just sitting there, you know, ignorance, you know, be conditioned white, right? Not, you know, not thinking about it at all. So I think, you know, thinking about this sort of thing, like you said, Daniel, you know, you're in the mall, you've thought about what would happen if somebody started shooting in the mall. Well, you know, well, okay, my first instinct is going to be to run, so I'm going to suppress that, and I'm going to, you know, find some cover, hide my wife and kids. I'm going to, you know, look for the threat, eliminate it if I can, or, you know, do whatever it is you're going to do. But just the simple fact, I mean, that kind of separates the people who are just at the mall, walking around blindly, getting their things, and, you know, they're not aware of anything other than the 3 feet in front of them, and that's pretty much it.
You're a step ahead by doing that.
Oh, I think we lost you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we've lost Daniel Shaw.
You know why we lost
him?
Oh, there we go. Oh, now he's back.
Start over, Daniel. We lost you for a second there. Last thing we heard you say was you're a step ahead. So that sounded like a compliment. So I want you to forget
so be careful.
All that.
Be careful, yeah.
Forgive me. Yeah, you're a step ahead of everybody else, and because you're not going to solve every problem, you're not going to think of every scenario. But what you are doing by doing that in your head is you're learning and you're training yourself to think tactically. Some of the decisions you make while you're doing that pre-planning in your head may be wrong, may be right. You don't really get to test them. A good thing to do would be, you know, ask somebody, you know, and get somebody else's input on it. What do they think? And you guys come up with something together and do what we call tactical decision games. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what you're doing. And it's a great training tool. And that's what I want to do with my courses. I can't teach someone all these things in an 8-hour course or a 16-hour course. But what I want to do, just like the communication thing for you to take back, I want to inspire thinking so you can think tactically, you can think efficiently, and you can learn a good decision-making process that could fit in a lot of different scenarios. And this, either using the same tactic or just altering it slightly.
Yeah, I like the idea of that tactical decision-making game. Do you think the grade threes would help me out with that, or should I, you know, stay with the grade twos whenever we play these games at school tomorrow?
The threes.
Probably go with the higher levels.
Yeah, the higher levels, yeah. I'll just find that the younger ones think so much outside of the box.
But they're still eating boogers, right?
They certainly are, let me tell you. Oh,
don't
it's gross.
Me.
Do they share?
They don't
Sadly,
share.
Sometimes they do.
Well, they don't share with me.
Kindergartners are all about sharing that stuff.
Well, on that booger-picking note...
Let's talk a little bit about the Vitals of Defense video series, Daniel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I had this crazy idea that I was going to make my YouTube video eventually pay my car payment. So I put on Craigslist. Do you guys use Craigslist up in Canada?
Yeah, well, we know of it. I don't personally use it.
It's crazy popular down here, man. You can find everything from like a toaster oven to a, you know, a junker car or everything in between, maybe even a Nick's girlfriend. It's crazy. But I posted on there. I was like, hey, I'm looking for somebody who just got out of school or something and they're trying to build a portfolio. I need somebody to just run a camera and knows a little bit about lighting because I want to make some cool YouTube videos. And I got a nice camera, but I don't know much about this stuff. And I can't, it's hard for me to film myself and do my stuff with myself, you know? So you can edit that part out. I'm sure you will.
Nope, I don't edit anything. You should know this by now.
Oh, at least get my coughing out where my throat was all scratched.
I wish you would, but he won't even do that.
No, it's fine.
Production quality is horrible.
That's how I roll.
Hate you guys.
So do I.
You're moving up to the Gun Dudes quality right now, like as far as you know my dislike.
He used Perfect. Gun Dudes and quality in the same sentence.
He swore he'd never do that again.
Yeah. That was a mistake.
Carry on.
No, what was I talking about?
YouTube.
Okay, yeah. Video okay, art. Yeah. So this guy emails me, and somebody else emailed me like at the same time, like, yeah, I can do that. And I talked to this first guy. And he's like, yeah, I can do all that stuff. That's cool. And then he's like, you know, I have a production company. I could do so much more just for a small budget. And he was talking like they're trying to get out of the genre of rap videos that they're in this local area because they don't get paid very much when they do get paid because usually they do all the work and then they don't ever get the money. But yeah.
Rappers ripping people off? Say
it
no.
Happens. It happens.
Say it ain't so.
So he was really cool about getting into this genre, and I got to hook him up with another job too with some other people locally, and they ended up we had this whole thing we're filming all day long with Steadicam, and it's looking like the Matrix and all kind of awesome video quality. And my whole idea was to present some. There's so many people out there just got concealed carry permits in the U.S. and are new to guns or they want to go buy guns. They don't know anything, so they go and Google stuff on YouTube, and they watch YouTube videos from horrible people that don't know anything about anything.
They know it feels good in the hand. That's the most popular line.
It feels good in the hand.
Yeah, that's the most popular line spewed on YouTube. I like this gun. It feels really good in the hand.
And so then my idea was to let me try to put some really solid instruction together for them and make it really cheap, and hopefully the 1.5 million since January 1st will go buy it. And yeah, they didn't. But I'm hoping those pick up a little bit, but at least to get my money back. And it's on the track to do that, just not as quick as I would like it to do.
Well, how does somebody buy it? Because I saw a link to one, and I saw a price of $7.95 and pay through PayPal. So
yeah, you can use PayPal or Google Checkout. I'll give you all that in just a second. I brought in Paul Carlson. He's a combat focus shooting. He teaches ICE training or Rob Pincus's curriculum.
Yep.
And I don't agree with all of that stuff. It's not we don't see eye to eye on quite a few things, but there's a lot of things that we do completely agree on. But it was interesting. I have never watched a video where there's two people who just didn't agree. I've never seen any kind of production out there where people just didn't agree and they were getting along and they weren't arguing and they were just presenting their information and their reasoning from two different angles. And that's what Paul and I did with the Vitals of Defense episode 1 and episode 2 that should be out here in hopefully a week. And that's what we did. And that's what they're just going to continue to do, both of our perspectives. And we're going to bring other folks in and give their perspectives on things too with other weapons, whether we're talking about bolt guns and scoped rifles or you know AR rifles or whatever we're using, lever actions, who knows what we're going to come up with. And that's what I want to keep making these and keep them coming. And just find the experts in these different fields and still present what I feel is right and what they feel is right. And people can go try the various techniques and they can go see which ones that fits them the best. Because we're all different. We're all individuals. And I'm not one of those guys who says, this is the way you do it because it's the way I do it and there is no other way to do it. I don't agree with that. I've never found one thing that works for everybody. And I don't think I ever will. So that's kind of what those are all about.
Trevor and I teach black badge courses for IPSC, and that's just a training course that's required in Canada. And that's what we say to the participants. What we're going to teach you works for 90% of the people that we work with.
However,
not everybody
should be aware of
that's
this
right.
Stance and this stance and this grip and this grip.
That's right. We teach them multiple ways of doing different things, and we let them figure it out for themselves because, you know, like we said, it's not for everybody. You can't just have one way. There's not one way to do anything. So
yep.
Well, there's you know, one way, and then there's the McClatchy way, right?
That's right. And then clearly that's the correct way, and then yep. Everybody else is doing it wrong.
Right.
Wish. Overall, I was incredibly happy with his video. And like, it came out better than I ever expected when I was making that Craigslist post, and it was really good. It was a huge learning experience for me. My other YouTube videos I've put on since then have gotten better just from the experience. I've realized that when you're in the sun and wind for 17 hours, you need to have eye drops if you wear contacts before you go to the gym days with crazy bright lights on you all night, because I had crazy eyes a little bit.
But I think that added to it. It was like, that is serious, man. He's intense.
Yeah, it was rough, man. It really was. It's a lot more draining than I expected. Mm-hmm. And it's doing everything out of context. It's not like you're on the line teaching and you're doing everything in a nice sequential order.
Yeah, exactly.
You're doing everything out of context. So everything that you're talking about is not what you should be talking about right now. Everything you're doing is not what you should be doing right now. It's just, it was different, man. It was tough. And it was, like I said, I think it came out good, and it's just going to keep getting better.
Well, tell us how to get them. Tell the listeners how to.
They are at www.gunfightercast.com. That's C-A-S-T. Some people sometimes confuse that. You go there, and at the top of the page, there's a little menu bar, and you'll click on Vitals of Defense. You can go in there and check out with Google Checkout. You can go in there and use PayPal. And if you don't have a PayPal account, people don't seem to figure this out. I get emails about it all the time. You can pay for it through PayPal with your regular credit card. You don't have to set up an account or anything.
That's correct, yeah.
So go pay that. And I'm actually getting ready to change the price point. And this is the first announcement of it, I guess.
So you're going up, right?
I am not.
Oh.
I've sold probably, you know, I don't even know exactly, a little over 100, which has helped me out. But it's still not where it needs to be to pay for my production and everything. So, and I'm seeing a lot of traffic going there, but they're not buying. And I think these things are worth, and everybody who's watched them has told me, like, yeah, people should pay like $10. Because if you compare a 20-minute video, and then we end up having five videos, and they're $7.95 each, you're getting close to the what you would pay for like a Panio production.
Yeah.
One of those and everything else. So it's kind of comparable to everything else out there. And you don't have to wait for a DVD to get there or anything else. So we were able to drop the price a little bit because we were just doing the digital downloads. But I'm going to drop it down to $5.95. And that's where it's going to go probably here in the next hour or so, actually.
Very cool. Matthew will be in at that price.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm in at this point right now. So, yeah. The Scottish in me is, you know, if it was $5.99, I mean, that was the limit right there. So $5.95, I'm in like Flynn. No worries.
Great.
Awesome.
So, and that's the idea. I see a lot of traffic going there, and people just aren't buying it. You know, and I'm selling enough a day that it's going to be paid off in a couple of months, but I want to have money in my pocket right now so I can schedule the next production.
That's
so
right.
And
we can
and
go
milk.
Do rifle and shotgun.
And milk is important for the three-year-olds.
Yes. Milk is important for three-year-olds, yes.
You know, otherwise, he's going to get like rickets or some kind of bone thing. No, come on, guys. Help feed Daniel's child, please.
That's
but,
right.
You know, even, I mean, you guys listen to Gunfighter Cast. I've been doing that for a long time and not getting paid anything for it, spending my own money on it. I like giving this stuff away, man. And I can't give away the training. You know, I got to charge people for that. But yeah. Gunfighter Cast isn't going anywhere. It's going to continue to be free. It's never going to not be free. And that's just, I love doing it. I love the interaction with the listeners. And I realize that there's a need out there, not only for people just learning to defend themselves, but the United States is in dire need of voices and people to say, look, these are not horrible things that just go off killing folks. We are responsible. We know how to be responsible because we may not have went and paid $300 for training, but I've listened to this guy and this guy and this guy for a long time, and he's kind of helped me learn how to think and how to do things the right way when I was brand new, and took me right along. Because you guys probably get the same thing I get, emails of saying, hey, I'm brand new, and you've been a great help to me.
As a matter of fact,
we got one of those tonight.
We got one of those tonight that we're going to share here in just a couple of seconds.
And that's why you keep doing this, man. And
absolutely.
Well, that's why Trevor keeps doing it. I mean, yeah, I'm just in it for the bacon.
Yeah. So realistically, with these videos, I want to make the money so I can do more videos. And if it gets to the point where I'm making extra money that I don't need to spend on new videos to make or production, then, you know, I'll put some in my pocket and put some in Paul's pocket. But, you know, right now I want to keep putting information out there. And I can't afford to do it on my own.
Very That's fantastic. Cool. I'm looking forward to getting into them.
Absolutely.
Carbine stuff, too. Like
Carbine. Carbine. He's American.
That's tomato, tomato.
There you go. There you go.
Potato, tomato. No, wait, no, that's a little different.
Well, Daniel, we're going to that was all awesome. This is going to be one of the best shows ever, I'm sure. And you're here because you're the real deal. Okay?
Should I have been funnier?
I was just going to say, Trevor, do you guys need a room? I don't know. Like, which way are we going with this
thing? I'm just saying that, you know, we wanted to talk to you, Daniel, because you're not just a guy with a concealed carry permit. You've lived it. You've been there, like you said, 17 years old, 1997. You got into it, and you've been doing it ever since. And you just can't – there's no substitute for your experience and your knowledge and –
I think what he's trying to say is thank you for joining us tonight. It was a real pleasure. Would you like to stick around for a listener feedback portion?
Really, really hate it when you do that so much. You have no idea. One of these days, you're going to get a bullet for that. I'm just in the knee.
Well, you have a bunch of ammo for me is what I'm saying. I mean, I'm going to get a bunch of bullets for it.
At 980 feet per second. So,
right. You know, so you're going to drive really fast.
What's funny is people say things like that. I go on a podcast or I meet people and they're like, oh, you're that guy from – I've met people at gun shows. They're like, hey, you're the host of Gunfighter Cast, right? And it blows my mind every time that people think of things like that because I don't. You know, it's like the people that I've been around for the whole time, they're all like me. You know, I'm not used to being around people that haven't really done the things that I've done. So it's I guess it's hard to explain, but you guys are certainly welcome. And I'm always honored when someone says, hey, you want to come on to my show? Because I started this thing like 4 years ago, the podcast, thinking ain't nobody ever going to listen to me. Like, why would they want to listen to this stuff? I was just a grunt with a microphone. And next thing you know, it's like, wow, this really – people actually listen to this thing. It's cool every time, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, and for sure. And like I said, I mean, we're all enthusiasts and you know, all the American podcasters, they're all carrying, right? But you're one of the few that actually got to work with a firearm for a living. So,
yep.
Kind of sets you in a different class, in my opinion.
Yeah, the front of the class, not like the back of the class where Trevor sat.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. I was in the hallway.
Sitting in the back of the class is a tactic. You
know? It certainly is.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
All right, so listener feedback. I'll take the first one, Matthew, obviously, because it's short.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So, just like your attention span.
What's that now? Who's this? What's going on?
This one comes to us from Brian Bolivar, or Bolivar, the host of Canadian Shooting Conditions Radio.
The Conquistador.
Canadian Service Conditions Shooting Radio. How about
you got it wrong three times now. Just read his email.
Wow. Anyway, he's got a show. Hey, guys. Totally agree with Trevor's points. My tumbler lives in the garage, mostly for noise, but dust too. And I wear a mask when I empty it. I also put a dryer sheet into the mix too. This absorbs a lot of the fine particles as the media breaks down during use and helps cut down on the dust that is released when you empty the bowl. Well, that's cool.
Smell good too, right?
Yeah. And we did talk about the tumbler last show, the show before, and the dust that it creates. But what we didn't focus on was the part where you get the most dust and the most pollution into the air of your home is when you separate the media from the brass.
Right.
That's when it gets really nasty. Running the tumbler actually has a rubber seal on it. That's not a big deal. When you dump the tumbler into the media separator and then you start separating the media from the brass, that's when it's nasty.
Yep. Do that carefully, folks.
Yeah, do it outside if possible. So.
Yep. Very good. All right, this next one comes to us from Muskog, and I'm guessing that's a CGN name or GOC name.
No, that's his Christian name.
Yeah, Muskog, yep. And he must have been a little bit of a psychic because he writes, hi, Trevor and Matthew. He knew Owen wasn't on the show tonight.
It's Durant.
Of course, he did forget Daniel, but, you know, we'll let that one go. He writes, "Greetings from the Texas of Confederation." I'm guessing that's Alberta. "I began listening to the other show late last year and have been following each episode since. I've been listening to Slamfire Radio since it started with a different name. Very informative and entertaining." Well, we'll go with the entertaining part, but... "I have been around firearms my entire life, but my involvement in gun culture has been pathetic. I would hunt with my bolt-action rifles every fall and occasionally head out to the range to punch paper and test out a new load. I do hand load as well. I purchased a couple of Norinco handguns several years ago, but only had them out a couple of times to the range. To be honest, I had found handguns boring, and they sat in the safe for years." Yeah, this email is done. Moving on. I'm kidding. He changes his tune here. "So they did sit in the safe for years without use. Then I began listening to CRR and more recently Slamfire Radio. I am now an avid fan of the shooting sports, and handguns have finally a use for me. In fact, they have become my primary interest when it comes to combusting gunpowder." All right, this email is interesting again. Very good. "My other guns, the bolt actions, have been languishing in the safe where they belong."
You
added that last part there, but anyway. "This year alone, you guys are responsible for the following. I have joined the NFA and CSSA. I have sold the Norinco pistols. I purchased a Smith & Wesson M&P range kit. I joined the Alberta Tactical Handgun League, which is an IDPA club. I competed in an IDPA new shooter course. I've competed in 3 IDPA competitions. I have competed in 1 3-gun competition. I have convinced a co-worker to shoot IDPA. I have purchased a CZ-75B for a backup gun. And finally, I have purchased my first AR-15 for 3-gun competition, and he got a DPMS Oracle 3. He still plans on at least 3 more IDPA competitions, at least 3 more 3-gun competitions, complete a black badge course so I can start shooting in IPSC, and convince at least 3 more friends to try IDPA or IPSC. And his plans for next year, more IDPA competitions, more 3-gun, more IPSC, some service/sniper condition shoots." That'll be interesting. He finishes off with, "My only regret is that I didn't discover this 10 years ago. Going forward, I want to get as many friends, family, colleagues, as many possible to try out the shooting sports. It seems to me that anyone who doesn't like guns has simply not had a positive shooting experience. I'm convinced that the antis are antis simply because they haven't had the opportunity to go shoot gophers, try IDPA or IPSC, shoot sporting blades, or simply execute a mag dump on target with an AR-15 using an LAR-15 10-round magazine. Of course, a 30-round... full capacity mag dump would be 3 times more fun."
Indeed.
"To conclude my email, thanks for all the great content, but thanks especially for the motivation. I will continue to update you with my progression into the shooting sports and gun nuttery in general. CGN and GOC username, Muskog." Well, please do keep us updated, because it sounds like you are off to a great start. And I look forward to hearing more about some of your IPSC and IDPA experience.
As a matter of fact, Matthew, Muskog just won the Listener of the Year award.
He did he?
He did.
You have won a giant bowl of Jack, and I'll mail that out to you right away.
What's
that? That was a lot of email.
That was a lot of email, yeah.
And what I kept focusing on the whole time was like, man, I really wish, and I've been thinking this for a while, I really wish us U.S. people would say Z instead of Z, because it sounds so much cooler.
Oh, yeah. And you can't confuse it with other letters that rhyme. There are so many letters that rhyme. You got to have a couple that don't.
Like Captain Price saying, get to the LZ, and you saying the CZ. You know, why don't we do that?
I don't know.
Yeah, why don't you do that? And while you're at it, could you please convert to the metric system?
I've been saying that forever, man. It's so much easier than this crazy standard crap we got.
Especially you got it. It's called a decimal.
Everything's like tens, or we can do this crazy complicated stuff where...
Yeah, no, let's go with 12s. No, that's much better.
Makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. But anyway, my car gets 3 rods to the hog head, and that's how
Speaking
I like it.
Speaking of rods, why don't you bring us our next email?
You got it. So it comes to us from Rod. Hello. I just listened to episode 8 and the limitations of your ATTs.
Here in BC is what he meant to say.
All right. I just listened to episode 8 and the limitations of your ATTs. See, when you put in the emails, Matthew, it doesn't hurt once in a while to correct some of these things, like lack of a capital letter at the beginning of a sentence.
Oh, no. It's much funnier this way.
And it says, here is BC. instead of saying, okay, here in BC, our ATTs are a bit more, air quotes, open. We still need a separate ATT for the initial transport from the dealer to home, but after that, we can transport it from home to any gun range and to the U.S. border with nothing extra needed from the BC CFO. I've attached an edited copy of two pages of page 2 and 3 from my ATT so you can see the wording. I have removed all my personal information from the attachment. Keep up the good work and enjoy listening. I enjoy listening to you guys. Rod from BC. Did you see that? I didn't.
Yes,
see
I did. I had a look at it, and not only does he have access to all the U.S. borders, but he can go to any of the gun ranges in the Yukon as well, because I believe the BC CFO is also the Yukon Territory CFO, so he has a big area. So, cool. Anyway, looks like Daniel needs to run, so yeah, cutting out early, you know, Americans. Yeah, you know how they hit and run, right?
Yeah. It's all good, man. Listen, it was a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for joining us, and keep us updated on what's been... Well, we'll just listen to the show, and we'll know what's going on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I got to have you guys on Gunfightercast sometime, and we'll talk about what happens, the things that you guys deal with whenever you don't have any rights, you know, like we do down here.
Yeah. Very cool. And, we look forward to it.
Keep me posted on the dates for when you might do something with the Gun Dudes. And some of your, just Facebook me your mailing address so we can put a t-shirt in the mail for you.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
See you later, Daniel. All right, well, I guess that brings us
to... Can I just say again how cool that was?
Yeah, it was cool. I agree. It really was. You're not going to start crying again, are you?
No.
So, yeah, I was talking about how the BC CFO is also Yukon Territories, but I think I said that enough, so we can move on to the... So, Rod, thank you for sending that. Thank you for making us all jealous of your ATT, and we hate you, and stop listening to this show.
No, it's really cool. And,
I'm kidding.
I love it when the listeners share their experiences with us, and we can do the comparison and contrast.
Absolutely. And this is what really blows my mind, is that these are federal firearms laws, and every single province and territory has its own rules and its own policies and their own way to set stuff up. And it's really getting irritating, I got to tell
you. You just took the rant right out of my mouth.
I do that sometimes.
A federal law...
should be federally enforced equally.
Or at least implemented equally by all CFOs.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway. All right, what do we got next?
From Michael. He writes, "Hello, guys. Keep up the great work." Well, thanks for writing in, Michael. Oh, he does go on here. Oh, look at that. "The information you provide here is invaluable to a beginner. I have had the opportunity to shoot a few guns at my club, the Walther P38, Browning Buckmark, Ruger Mark II, Smith & Wesson 357, Smith & Wesson 9, 40 cal, and 45. My question for you is, when my RPAL arrives, I want to maximize my flexibility in purchasing a handgun. So the challenge is to purchase an accurate target shooting 22 or 9mm. Or is there a 9mm that's accurate and reliable that can be converted to 22 for budget's sake?
Yes.
I'd also like a 9mm rifle of some sort down the road, as my club allows only handgun calibers. Thanks in advance for your suggestions. Cheers, Mike Gibson." And I was actually talking to Mike on Facebook a little bit earlier this week, and had a pretty good conversation with him. And yeah, I told him that if he wrote in, we would we'd answer his questions a little bit more in detail than what my standard reply was, which was any polymer striker fired pistol is probably a good start.
I concur. Case in point, my family doctor, his wife bought a CZ SP-01 Shadow. And he shot a Glock, and she shot a Glock. She used my Glock 17 during the Black Badge course, and now she's on to the SP-01, and, you know, she's a complete neophyte. That's for you, 10X. And her take on it is that I'm too new to realize the benefits of the SP-01 over the Glock that people tell me exist in this firearm. All I know is, this is a heck of a lot more complicated than the Glock was. I got to lower the hammer. She had an AD in practice the other day. Lowering the hammer, it slipped on her.
Yep.
Also, the trigger pull, the first one, The trigger's way out in the middle of the trigger guard. She's got to get her little finger around there, right? Where the Glock is farther back. I mean, it's just... What was I talking about?
He squirreled himself.
Yeah. So, and then you know, Dr. Peltier, looking at that CZ and having shot a Glock before, he now says, just give me a Glock, because there's no bells, no whistles, nothing fancy to mess with or forget about. You have to remember the manual of arms takes some getting used to in a firearm, and the less there is to mess with, the faster you'll get used to it. That's my opinion.
That's right. Yeah, I would start with something simple that has very few external controls. You don't need a hammer. Striker fired is good. A Glock is great because it doesn't even have an external safety except for the one that's built right into the trigger guard. Now, that being said, he did tell me that he wasn't going to be doing a whole lot of competition with this, just kind of shooting, plinking, having some fun. So you could pretty much pick up whatever you like, but if you're looking for something that is, you know, 9mm that you can convert to 22 that's still really accurate, Advantage Arms does make a 22 kit for the Glock. It's not horribly accurate, though. It's more of a way to still let you shoot, but on a budget. But you're not going to find the same type of accuracy that you're going to get out of the Browning Buckmark, for example, that you shot.
Yeah. So depending on the distances he wants to shoot, if he's going to keep everything inside, I mean, he's going to get minute of man with the 22 conversion kit on the 9.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. But if you're looking to punch, you know, ragged holes with your 22 handgun, which you can do, I can do it with my, I have a Ruger Mark a Ruger Mark 3. And that's very similar to the Browning Buckmark. Fantastic trigger pull on both, you know. You could probably
get a 22.
I was just going to say, you could probably pick up, this is what I did. I picked up a Ruger. See, I used to have a Glock 17 with an Advantage Arms 22 kit on it. And this was before I started competing, and I did not see the point in taking my 9mm to the range and every single time putting the 22 conversion kit on it and just shooting 22s all day, because I was just didn't like shooting 9mm a whole lot. So I sold that, and I bought the Ruger Mark III. And just was shooting that, and then when I got back into IPSC, I ended up with the striker-fired the Ruger SR9, and it turns out that the Ruger SR9 and the Mark III both cost about what it cost me to get the Glock and the Advantage Arms kit for it. So why not spend the same amount of money and get two guns instead of spending a whole bunch of money and just get one? Do you follow?
I agree.
Oh, he can't hear me.
No, I agree. take for example my GSG 1911.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful gun. Simple to use.
Is. Yep.
You know, it's a single action gun. Slap the mag in, rack the slide, pull the trigger, you know.
And the cool thing about that is that it looks like a real gun.
Yep.
Where I'm not saying that the Ruger Mark III or the Browning Buck Marks don't look like real guns, but they don't really look.
It's a clone of the 1911. It's got almost the same size, shape and weight. It's actually really heavy for a little 22 pistol.
Yeah, it's a lot of metal in there.
Yeah. And they're affordable. They really are. They're cheaper than a conversion kit. Now, that being said, though, what if he does want a 9mm and a conversion kit? Okay, sure, we always go back to the Glock.
Yeah, there's also SIG, though. You want to spend a lot of money, you can go SIG. And you can also go CZ. CZ has, what's the 22 conversion kit they have for it called? I can't remember.
I'm not sure either, but there is a conversion kit for the CZ-75.
Yep.
And which Ruger?
What do you mean?
Is there a 9mm Ruger that you can also put a conversion kit on?
I don't know of any Ruger firearms that you can convert
Foglio,
kit like that.
Tanfoglio, I believe, also has one. SIG?
Cadet. The CZ-75 Cadet adapter is what it's called. Okay. It's Cadet with a K.
So
and those are
there.
Actually very accurate from what I've heard. I don't know for sure. I don't have any first-hand experience, but from what I've heard is they're very accurate and very reliable. So you could go CZ. I'm not a huge fan of the CZ for the reasons Trevor mentioned about 5 minutes ago. They're complicated. They're heavier than they need to be, and they have an external hammer and a double action on the first trigger pull.
And she also talked about that high bore access. She didn't know what it was called. She didn't know what was causing it, but she did understand that the muzzle rise was a lot higher in that than the Glock. This one's so much snappier.
Right.
So she went from shooting a pretty much bone stock Glock 17 to a CZ Shadow
And then went back.
And well, she found the Seized Shadow Snappier, and you know, yeah. really it shouldn't be because it's a heavy metal gun.
But when you have that the recoil happening higher up, that's right, you get that muzzle flip a lot more.
That's right.
So listen, Mike, here's what I'd recommend. I'd recommend you pick up a Glock 17 as a 9mm or something similar, something striker fired in polymer. So get something simple. And then pick up your choice of a dedicated 22 pistol. Don't get a conversion kit. My recommendation, anyway. Get a dedicated 22 pistol because it's its own gun. It'll do what it's designed to do, and it's not going to try to take your 9mm and turn it into something it's not. My experiences with 22 conversion kits so far have been less than reliable. They work fairly well, but you're taking a 9mm and you're making it do something it wasn't really designed to do. Yeah. So a Ruger Mark III, fantastic firearm. Browning Buckmark, fantastic firearm. I mean, even if you want to go with the GSG 1911, I know it's a 1911. Bolivar will have to like me for this, though, because I recommend it. They're good guns.
He sold his, so whatever.
I love Trevor's. I don't really want it because it still looks like that 1911, but, you know, if you're a 1911 fan, you'll love the GSG 1911.
I found a way to get rid of it, eh?
It does sink in water, right? You could just throw it in the lake?
Oh, yeah. I threw it in as a bonus for my realtor. If he actually does close the deal, I told him I'd give him the gun.
There you go.
So, the Advantage Arms, I mean, Harold has to run his with CCI Stingers. So if you've got to put super premium 22 ammo in it, if you're reloading 9mm, you're not really saving any money.
Now, that being said, the one that I had, I could run bulk ammo through it, but only after I had run about 2 or 3 magazines and got it dirty. The first 2 or 3 magazines, after I had cleaned it, it would jam. Once it got dirty, it started working properly again. But I did just run bulk ammo through it, and it did work fairly well. But...
Strange.
Yeah, it was kind of strange.
Cool.
I hope that helped, Mike. And thanks for writing in, and it was a blast talking to you on Facebook. So, yeah. Trevor, bring us the best iTunes review this week. And I have to say, this didn't actually come this week. This is an older one, right?
Well, see, what I did was I waited for one that had me in it.
You waited for one? Yes, you did.
We said that. We said, you know, Trevor will read your iTunes review if Trevor is mentioned. We said that.
Yep.
I believe Owen said that. So here it is. This comes from the Wise Bassist.
Or bassist. I mean, maybe he's a fisherman, and he's a very smart fisherman. Who knows?
Okay. Yeah. So, amazing show, but could use more cowbell. The same hour and a half version of what Trevor did this week with guns that we all know and love. Now with 33% more IPSC and 1911 hate. Amazing show. Always a highlight in my podcast listening week.
Are you sure we didn't do this one before?
I'm positive.
Okay.
In 6 months. Because
it sounds familiar.
In 6 months, when you forget about it, I'll put it in again.
Because I thought we talked about the 33% thing before, but anyway, maybe we didn't.
Oh, but maybe he heard us say that and he put it in his review.
Oh, maybe. Anyway, for the rest of you listeners out there, head over to iTunes. If you're so inclined, leave us a 5-star rating. It really helps with our ratings, with our, you know, more exposure. And leave a review. It does, even if you don't leave a 5-star review, leave a rating. Just leave a review. Make it funny, make it witty. And if you put Trevor's name in it, he'll read it.
Yeah. And if you make fun of Matthew, I'll read it twice.
Yeah. I love it. Do it. So, yes, thank you to everybody who's rated us so far and reviewed the show so far. It's a real joy to go through and read some of those things. It's the highlight of my day some days.
Wow, you don't got much going on, dude.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I gotta get out more.
Yeah, you sure do.
I really do. Got to get with my pellet gun, I guess.
Time to unplug.
All right, well, speaking of unplugging, make sure you go and visit our favorite online gun forums. That would be Canadian Gun Nuts, Gun Owners of Canada. Gun Owners of Canada is pretty cool because every month they do giveaway contests. To be eligible, you have to be a member of the forum, but they give away knife sets, holsters, range bags. There's going to be a couple PCV50s up for grabs soon, so if you want a 50 caliber AR-15 magazine, you might want to head over and check that out. Please go ahead and like us on Facebook, and also you can interact with us there. You can post pictures and talk to us, and we'll probably even talk back.
Yeah, we talk back a lot.
We certainly do. Yeah, sometimes we're even polite about it. If you'd like to, post our banner in your online forum. Instructions are on the contact page. That just puts a little thing underneath that says you listen to the show, which is kind of cool. Again, exposes us a little bit, but in a good way.
Yes, the right kind of exposure and the right amount of exposure is very important.
Oh, very important. Please don't forget to head over to the Canadian Reload Radio Network. Check out the other fantastic shows such as the Warriors Ethos podcast, CSCR. Like, none of us can remember what the acronym stands for. Radio Velocité Quebec. If you're so French inclined, you could head over and listen to some French.
I am so behind on their show.
So am I. I haven't even listened to one. But then again, I don't speak French.
Yeah, I do. And we're looking forward to getting them on soon.
That's right. And it will be in English for most of it, probably.
Yeah, they speak better English than I do French, so.
They speak better English than I speak English most of the time.
I want to put a plug in for Talking Lead.
How about Gunfighter Cast? We should probably plug them. Oh, wait, they probably have been, huh?
I think probably a little bit. Yeah, Mr. McGregor.
Yeah, Talking Lead. Yeah, you didn't even say McGregor. Right.
McGregor.
No, when you said it the first time, I was going to interrupt you, but I was like, no, he doesn't like when I do that. I was going to say, you said it wrong. I thought it was McGregor.
Yeah, you're right. Anyway. We should have did McGregor.
Continue with this Talking Lead thing.
Yes, Talking Lead. Zeke and Left Hand out of Tennessee. They are, like, in my opinion, except for us, of course, the best new show that's out there. And, I mean, these guys hit the ground running. They're doing a fantastic show. I plugged them a couple times on Canadian Reload Radio. I don't think I plugged them here yet.
You have now.
Bolivar and I have been listening to them since day one. Bolivar turned me on to them. I've talked with Left Hand quite a bit through Facebook and stuff like that. He's got a couple of sub 2000, so we were sharing sub 2000 notes, etc. Anyway, why do I bring it up? Not just because I'm a nice guy and I want to plug another show. It's because I'm an egomaniac and I want to let everybody know that I'm going to be on their show with Bolivar next Thursday. So if you haven't checked them out yet, well, for sure you're going to want to check that show out. And
done now?
No, I also want to plug Politics and Guns. Paul, all right. Toby, and Brian and Raquel and all those good folks over there. We like that show a lot too. So, and the Gun Dudes. We don't plug the other shows like we should, but check
it's out. Because we don't have enough time.
Yeah, I know, but you know, share the love. Listen up.
Absolutely. All kinds of great yeah, stuff. Go listen to other shows. They are good as well. So, yeah. So don't forget to go to the charity shoot because we're going to be there and it's going to be awesome.
If you want your T-shirt delivered to the charity shoot, let me know.
That's right.
That.
And last but not least, please go join the NFA and or the CSSA. They not only need the numbers, they need the money, they need the donations, they need all the help they can get. We need to continue fighting for our rights. Yes, we have rights in Canada. They're just not recognized. So we need to continue fighting for these. And the only way we can do that is by using the organizations that we already have in place. If you're not even going to, I hear people say, well, if I live in the States, I join the NFA or the NRA. Well, you don't. You live in Canada. So join the NFA and the CSSA. Let's get this done. Let's win.
And then?
Take somebody shooting.
Wait a second. That's not how it goes.
Oh, yeah. What do I say again? Oh, Trevor, it's your cue.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.